Prologue. Niagara Falls, Spring, 1919. Two men clung to the rusted railings, their eyes wide with terror. Helpless in the grip of the current, the barge gathered speed, rushing headlong through the churning waters toward the distant thunder and the plume of spray that marked the falls. The tow rope had parted suddenly with a pistol-like crack that reverberated through the cold spring sunshine and sent the men on the decks diving for cover. There were only two men on the barge, and at first no one expressed any fear for their lives. The tugboat was far upstream from the falls, chugging steadily towards the busy port of Buffalo with the rest of the tow of gravel barges. The wayward barge would ground itself long before it reached the point of no return. On board the tugboat, the crew waved derisively at their stranded crewmates. But it was spring, and the Niagara River was in full torrent, fed by the melting pack ice of Lake Erie. The barge, which bore no name, for she had never been an object of interest, found no welcoming sandbanks and no rocks to slow her progress. Soon she began to swing around in lazy circles, one moment pointing upstream towards Buffalo and safety, and the next rushing downstream towards the precipice. She began to attract attention, and word spread rapidly. On both banks of the river, Canadians and Americans gathered to watch in helpless fascination as the drifting barge picked up speed, tossed on the waters of the wide river. She swept on past Navy Island, where they had hoped she might run aground. Onward, onward, until the sun began to set, turning the waters into a sullen, bloody red. Currents carried her rapidly past Grand Island, while the rough white water surged along her sides. On board the barge, Dan O'Reilly and Fred Baker, hardened sailors who had survived the perils of the Great War, clung to the rusted deck plates and prayed to the god of their childhood for rescue. Above the rushing of the waters, they could hear the awesome sound they so dreaded. The evening air was filled with the booming thunder of the falls. Just a few hundred yards downstream, the waters of Lake Erie hurled themselves over a horseshoe-shaped precipice and fell almost 200 feet onto the rocks below. Lights blossomed along the shoreline, holding off the darkness. These were not rescuers, for how was rescue possible? They were sightseers, rushing to watch the ultimate spectacle, men and machinery sacrificed to the falls. Between 1894 and 1919, 37 souls had been rescued from the waters of the Niagara River by one man. One man who stood now on the bank of the river, his sad gray eyes probing the darkness, wondering if he had the courage to do it again. Chapter 1. Evangeline. May 12, 1923. "Nearly there," said Iris DeVere. Evangeline Murray hid her annoyance behind a smile. Poor little Iris. She was only being kind, and it wasn't her fault that she was also being very irritating. Ever since they had begun their train journey in Cleveland, Iris had assumed that Evangeline would be a nervous wreck. Evangeline glanced out of the train window for a final glimpse of the United States. Soon, very soon, they would be at the Canadian border, and the adventure would begin. The real adventure. The adventure that would make her, Evangeline Murray, an inconsequential widow, into a star. Her name would be a household word. Was it really too much to ask for? She smiled again. Of course not. "Are you all right, dear?" Iris asked again. Her small face was creased into lines of concern. "Leave her alone, Iris," growled Cornelia Braithwaite. "She's perfectly fine." Iris opened her mouth to protest, thought better of it, and settled for giving Evangeline a tentative pat on the arm. Cornelia Braithwaite lounged comfortably in the corner of the carriage, puffing determinedly on a small cigar. Iris had made a token protest, but backed off as soon as the older woman fixed her with a withering stare. Iris had coughed, and Cornelia had continued to smoke throughout the rest of the journey. "You wouldn't object if I were a man," had been Cornelia's argument. "But you're not a man," Iris protested. "And I wouldn't want to be," Cornelia said. The remark had surprised Evangeline because she had assumed the opposite. Everything about Cornelia Braithwaite, from her clumsy brown shoes to the man's necktie at her throat, indicated that the one thing she would like to be was a man. Cornelia finished her cigar, stubbed it out in the ashtray, and gave Evangeline her instructions. "Remember, Mrs. Murray, no interviews. Let me do the talking." "But Cornelia," Iris protested. "They'll want to talk to Evangeline. After all, she's the one who's going to do it." The last word was whispered. Evangeline suspected that Iris could not bring herself to say it aloud, to actually say the dreadful thing that Evangeline was about to do. "I wish we were there," said Evangeline. "I hate all this waiting." "Soon, soon," said Cornelia. "If you look out of the window, you can see Buffalo." "And the lake," said Iris enthusiastically. Evangeline allowed Iris an indulgent smile. There was so little difference in their ages. Perhaps Iris was even a year or so younger, but such a vast difference in their experiences. Being so vulnerable, so easily excited, so easily frightened, was something that Evangeline had happily left behind many years before. However, to keep Iris happy, she stood up, pulled down the window, and leaned out. "Be careful," Iris warned. "It's a very small risk," Evangeline said, "compared to what's coming next." "But you shouldn't bend over like that," said Iris. "Not with such a short skirt. People can see right up your legs." Evangeline smiled. "If they want to look, let them. That's what I say. I don't mind people looking at me, Iris." "I do," said Iris. "I've never liked people looking at me. But I've never been beautiful." "No, you certainly haven't," agreed Cornelia unfeelingly. "But that's no excuse for feeling sorry for yourself. I personally think that beauty is of no consequence. Still, if it brings in the crowd, then Mrs. Murray should show off her legs. She does have nice legs." Evangeline stood upright abruptly and smoothed down her skirt. She felt that there was something unpleasant about the idea of Cornelia looking at her legs. Something very unpleasant. "Not long now," said Iris again. Evangeline nodded and looked at the view as the waters of Lake Erie flashed by. She thought about the water, so very much water, flowing into the Niagara River. Acres of it, miles of it, gallons of it, beyond her wildest imagination. All that water rushing together towards one place. And soon she would be at that place. Soon the world would know what Evangeline Murray had done. She would never be anonymous again and never be poor. Could she be afraid? It was such a small price to pay. After all, it was only water. How bad could it be? Joshua McLaren, May 12, 1923. His 49th birthday. Joshua McLaren had been dreaming again. The barge. Always that damn barge. 4 years had gone by, but it still haunted his dream. Still at night, he traveled into that nightmare world where the barge teetered on the brink of the falls, and the men on board screamed for rescue. He rolled out of his solitary bed, the bed he had once shared with a wife, and prepared to face the day. His 49th birthday. He took inventory of the various aches and pains that had been caused by his years of living on a Canadian riverbank. Those pains would fade as the day wore on, and the work absorbed him. The other pains, caused by 4 years in the trenches, were not so easily forgotten. He washed his face, decided to do nothing about his red-gray beard stubble, and arrived in the kitchen to find that his sister Nell had the porridge on the table already, thick and creamy and seasoned with salt. Nell offered her older brother a thin smile and surprised him with an awkward peck on his cheek. "Happy birthday, Josh." "Aye." "Tea?" "Of course." 50, is it?" "No." Josh looked up from the oatmeal. 49, not that it matters." "What have you done to your skirt?" Nell blushed, an effect which did not go well with her sandy hair and freckled face. "Nothing," she said. "You've shortened it."
"Just a little."
"I can see almost to your knees."
"Well, what's wrong with that?"
Nell whisked the porridge bowl away from him and busied herself with the sink.
"But you're a grown woman."
Yes, I am, said Nell. Joshua finished his tea. I'll be off. I've got a lot of work to do today.
Good, said Nell.
Glad to see the back of me, are you? Josh asked.
I have things to do.
Well, Josh declared,
if it involves anything outside this house, for heaven's sake, cover up your knees, woman.
You look ridiculous. Nell rattled the dishes in the sink for a moment and then said, we're going to have visitors arriving today. Bed and breakfast.
It's too early in the season, Joshua declared.
The earlier the better, Nell said. You will be nice to them, won't you? They're educated ladies from Ohio. I shall ignore them as I always do,
Joshua assured her.
They might want you to help them.
With what? Joshua asked.
Oh, just something they want to do, Nell said vaguely.
I prefer to ignore them, Joshua said on his way out the door.
You might not be able to, said Nell.
Joshua heard the warning, but he had already made up his mind. No educated ladies from Ohio were going to get any attention from him.